kind of a show are you guys putting on here today?
You're not interested in art?
No.
Well, look, we're going to do this thing. We're going to have a conversation.
All right, welcome to Film Spotting After Hours, or Film Spotting After Dark, or Film Spotting The Orts. I don't
Maybe
know.
Maybe we
I
need to get some suggestions.
We probably have to come up with a name here. I'm Matty Robinson. Alongside me, my co-host, the man, the myth, the legend, what a guy, what a fellow, what a king cobra, Mr. Adam Kempinar. And basically, the genesis behind this show is that we get so much feedback that we really don't get a chance to address it on air. I know, Adam, you read every single email. I have an intern that briefs me on the good stuff.
Uh-huh.
And we also get a lot of calls from people saying, hey, we really would love it if you could do two shows a week. Well, we don't really have it in us to do two shows a week.
Back in the day, Film Spotting did.
Yeah,
I
know.
Burned out.
Unbelievable. Yeah. But now with ready-made material, if we could, you know, sort of give something back, that's what we're going to try and do here. We can't promise we're going to do this every week.
We're going to try.
But we're going to certainly try. Anyway, so why don't we start with some Charlie Bartlett feedback. And Paul Schaefer from Petaluma, California writes in. He says, hey, you really had me going for a while with your Charlie Bartlett review, Adam, until I realized that this was another bizarro Film Spotting review in which everything you say is the opposite of what you mean.
I didn't preface my review with that.
I suggest that you add a bizarro footnote with that review, along with Revenge of the Sith, Black Snake Moan, and History of Violence to help out the newer listeners. Phil is my new best friend.
Yeah.
Let's get together on Facebook, Phil.
Maybe you guys need to. Black Snake Moan and History of Violence, I am not going to.
Gold.
Take back those reviews. However, Revenge of the Sith, I'm just going to pretend that episode never happened. Kevin in Calgary with a good one here. Hey, guys, I'm relatively new to the show and love it. Some of the highlights of the podcast, in my opinion, are when the two of you get into debates over the merits or lack thereof of a particular film. There are usually points I'm in tune with on both sides of the debate, but I gotta say, I am all in with Maddie on Charlie Bartlett. Anton Yelchin's performance was nowhere near as fully developed as Ellen Page in Juno. He is one-dimensional and is not appealing in any way. This character is no Ferris Bueller, he's no Max Fisher, he's not even Lane Meyer. That's Kevin in Calgary. I do really appreciate the reference to Better Off Dead
in
Kevin's email, even though he's taking me to task. I will say that, no, you're right, it's nowhere near as developed as Ellen Page and Juno, but that's not Anton Yelchin's fault. That's the writer and director's fault. I will also add, not appealing in any way. Yeah, I can't think of anything. The fact that he's smart, naturally anti-authoritarian, the fact that he's gentle and friendly to every single person he meets. Other than that, nothing appealing about
fine.
Character.
Adam Pulcher writes in, from parts unknown, people, you need to include your geographic
Apparently
location.
Not. They still get referenced.
Yeah, right. Maddie, I'm surprised by your passionate hatred for Charlie Bartlett. Although I think the movie has its small problems, I loved Anton Yelchin's performance. I thought it was fun and heartfelt, and I, like Adam, laughed my ass off at the audition scenes. I don't always agree with your views on certain films, but usually walk away with rightful justification on why you didn't like a film, whereas here, I think you're taking the movie way too seriously. This was meant to be fun and quirky, not a serious delve into the conscious of adolescence. One of your main problems seemed to be lack of real consequence, but Charlie Bartlett is a product of the upper class, someone who's not used to any consequences, but ends up learning lessons, discovering himself through society that he's created, and has fun on the way. Well, I completely disagree.
Just chill out, Maddie.
No, I know, man. I'm telling you, if you're going to do a high school movie, there is more responsibility you need to take to do with it, because it's not just about painting a picture of high school. And I think this film understands that, but he touches on what I really did not like about this film, that there was no consequence. He really, to me, I don't think he learned his lesson. That's
okay.
My big problem.
Well, I think he did in the end. Let's get on to this one, though, from Steven Jablonski, also from Parts Unknown. I couldn't agree with Maddie more. I'm appalled to hear Charlie Bartlett's Anton Yelchin grace with the phrase on par with Ellen Page. I hated watching commercials claiming that it's in the same heart as Juno. Maddie's right. High school is not a popularity contest. Juno knew that and basked in a world that didn't need a wealth of attention. While popularity, like society, is inevitably embedded in the high school experience, it's a facade to how much more there really is, and to ignore all other aspects of high school and to only focus on that static world fashioned specifically for Charlie Bartlett is a waste of a good premise.
Very good point. It is a waste of a good
premise. High school is not a popularity contest. Maybe where
That's
you're
the
from,
point, man.
Maddie?
That's the point, man. It's not supposed to be a popularity contest, and he's supposed to learn that lesson. He will do anything. He will manipulate anyone so he can be cool, so that he can be friends with everybody, and I don't think at the end he really learns that, no, you don't need to do that.
Did you fall asleep with about a half hour left in the movie, Maddie?
Well, now's a good time to mention that we have a new donation system in place.
Oh, and we do.
Adam, would you like to lead me through this? It's more complicated than the Bowl Comp Championship Series to me.
Yeah, it is pretty tough, actually, with what we used to have where you just got a great nickname. But basically, you send in a donation, $10, $20, $30, whatever your donation is, we really appreciate it. For each $10 that you donate, you will get another name in the hat. We pick out your name at the end of the month. In with everyone else, you get to pick a movie that we're going to discuss on the show. We'll feature that review on our website, filmspotting.net.
Right. And you'll also win a Film Spotting Fun Pack.
And you will also get a Film Spotting Fun Pack. You will get some Film Spotting swag, which you can check out at filmspottingswag.com. Here we are promoting everything we possibly can.
All right, let's move on to discoveries a while back. Of course, we waxed nostalgic with Sammy Van Hallgren about our favorite Film Spotting discoveries. Andrew Timko from New York writes in. He says, I hope it's not too late to squeeze in my biggest Film Spotting discovery. Although I'm sure that there are movies that you guys have turned me on to, the first and foremost discovery to come to mind was a musical variety. I consider myself to be very knowledgeable about music, but I had never heard of nor heard the music of Dan Byrne before, but his tunes really stood out in the multiple episodes in which you used him for the interludes. Baby Bye Bye has been in heavy rotation on my iPod for months, and God Said No is one of those rare songs where the lyrics outshine the music by a large margin, which isn't to say the song is bad. Thanks for that one.
Well, you're welcome, Andrew, and I do love to hear that. I love whenever we get emails from people who do compliment the music on the show, because we do tend to get that as the only complaint people have a lot of times is they hate our choice of songs, and that's fine. You're not going to please everyone. But Dan Byrne, I can say, is actually the reason why we play songs on the show, the reason why we feature certain artists. Dan Byrne was the first one. I wanted to feature his songs, and so I sought out his record label and got the permission, and that opened the door to get other artists on the show. But it was all because I wanted to feature Dan Byrne and expose him to more people. So I love the fact that Andrew is on the Dan Byrne bandwagon now.
I love Bobby Byrne.
You do call him Bobby Byrne. Sam does as well. This one from Phil in D.C. Thanks for introducing me to the movie Once and the incredible song Falling Slowly. I'm a 56-year-old male with grown children who is a romantic at heart. Loved this, he writes.
That's a great choice. It's a great song.
It is.
All right, this comes from Melissa in Bellingham, Washington. She says, I've been thinking about my Film Spotting discoveries. While I've only been listening to Film Spotting for about a year, I guess, I feel like this year has been a revelation for me. While I've always loved watching movies and listening to reading reviews, I never really knew until listening to your show and hanging out on the message boards. We do have message boards at filmspotting.net.
Yes.
How many great films I was missing out on. Punch Drunk Love, I'm Not There, King of Kong, The Big Lebowski, Before Sunset, and, of course, the infamous Double Indemnity.
That's right. She says, I know you or one of you had sort of mixed feelings about this film, but she loved it and would not have seen it but for our show. Yes, I love that film, one of my favorites, and I took Sam to task memorably for the fact that he was sort of mixed on that movie, but we love hearing that. Melissa is a regular listener who writes in a lot, and we appreciate that. Let's get on, though, to some Ellen Page feedback, and this ties in with our Best of Interview show last week. We replayed our interview with Ellen Page and Diablo Cody and talked a little bit about the fact that some listeners were turned off a little bit by Ellen Page and some of her comments. Anna Zemansky in Brooklyn, New York writes in, I just wanted to comment on the reaction to the Ellen Page interview. I'm a new listener to Film Spotting, and I really enjoy the show. Nevertheless, I was horrified at the reaction the listeners had to Page's comments. Her point is extremely relevant, and she wasn't being bitchy, only honest. After countless interviews where she was asked, what's it like to play a strong woman, I can't blame her for being a little mad. It's an offensive question. I understand that you guys were not actually asking this question, but I was also a bit annoyed at your flip comment, Maddie, about having to get a copy of The Feminine Mystique, a decades-old text that isn't even that relevant to modern feminism, but whatever. One of the major faults in the film industry, past and present, is the limited portrayals of females. This is not an issue that should be brushed aside.
Well, I absolutely agree, and I have to say, she's right. I'm not that relevant to modern feminism, but I do stand by the fact that I do like The Feminine Mystique, and I was just coming to the support of my boy, you. I really felt, and I listened to the interview this week, I really felt that Paige she was tired. She was tired of hearing the question. She thought you were...
She heard me say hard candy and made an assumption.
Exactly. So I was just jumping to your defense, man.
Well, I appreciate that, as does Kathy Stevens here, who says, I have to agree with some of your other listeners. I, too, was put off by Ellen Page's reaction to your question. I think she was a little defensive and rude, and she probably misinterpreted your question. Yes, she did. I'll bet it was a reaction to previous interviewers who may have expressed surprise at her ability to find intelligent characters to play. And we'll read one more here, because we did get a lot of response on this. And I will just say, what I've been writing back to some of these people, trying to explain what I think some listeners were saying when they said they were put off by Ellen Page. And again, it's hard for me to really speak for them. But I think the problem is, where some people are maybe seeing a little bit of hypocrisy, is just that she starts off the interview by saying how, you know, she loved playing Juno because she was so refreshing. There aren't characters like her in film. There's this dearth of strong female characters. And then when that question gets posed to her, though again, I didn't really ask her that, but when she thinks that's the question, she gets offended and acts like it's an out-of-line question. her point, absolutely, as Anna said, you know, yes, the problem is there aren't enough strong female characters in movies. But I do want to say the reason I didn't ask her that question, Maddie, was exactly because when I watch Anton Yelchin or Emil Hirsch in a strong male role, I just assume that's a strong character they want to play. No different with Ellen Page or any other female character. I don't see the difference there. I'm like Stephen Colbert. I don't see gender.
I know. Great reference. All right. Well, let's close out this chapter of this show with one more email from Megan Riley in Austin, Texas. I really like this one. It really frustrates me that Page was called a hypocrite for her stance on feminism during your interview. I consider myself to be a pretty radical feminist and have been so for over 10 years. And I've repeatedly said the exact same thing that Page did, that we never tell an up-and-coming male actor that he's playing strong male roles, and that this disparity shows how far we have to go. When women are singled out for their achievements and the fact that they are female is tagged on, it feels to me like an apology. Yes, Ellen Page played a strong female role, but why couldn't she just have been recognized as an actor, period, without her gender being a part of it? To me, this really does show how far we have to go in feminism, and your listeners should perhaps examine their own anti-feminist beliefs about what will truly lead us into equality. I think that's very well put. And, you know, I've always wondered this. Why not just have at the Academy Awards just a best actor?
Yeah.
Male and female.
Well, I have gotten into this discussion with someone over at Spout before. And I think the fact is because what's different, of course, about an editor or a cinematographer who truly can be anybody you want to hire is obviously when you write a script, there are certain roles designed for specifically men or women. I mean, I think that's what it could be based on. I'm not saying that that's the best reason or best explanation, but you cast specifically usually for a male or a female. So making that distinction to me isn't a problem. I understand that.
I wonder if, you know, The Year of Living Dangerously, I don't know the story behind that. Was that role written with Linda Hunt in mind?
Now, granted, you're right. There are always cases where someone comes in and they had a role envisioned a certain way and someone changes it. But, I mean, historically, that's why it's there, and I think generally. So that doesn't really bother me. I mean, I do think that Megan's email and her point there is very well taken. I don't disagree at all. The one thing I do want to caution listeners is jumping on our listeners, even in an email like this, for comments they made that were filtered through me paraphrasing what they said.
Yeah.
Just because that's how I interpreted it or maybe paraphrased it briefly on the show does not mean a bunch of people wrote in who are misogynist pigs. And in fact, they're not, based on the comments I read. So I would just caution people against that. But she's right. Ellen Page's performance, I don't know why you would single it out as being a particularly strong female performance. We certainly never did that on the show, nor would we.
No.
So
exactly. And I because I think that whole movie is filled with strong female performances. I actually felt that the whole year was really filled with
it. Definitely. Well, let's get on to a movie recommendation here, Maddie. We do get a lot of these and don't usually get a chance to share them on the show. But Evelyn So wrote in to recommend Miss Pettigrew, and it's actually, what is it,
Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day?
Yeah, which I think I recall forwarding you that email and you saying, Miss Pettigrew isn't your bag.
No.
Or something like that.
Anyway, why don't you read what Evelyn has to say about it?
Not sure if this movie is on your radar, but I just watched Miss Pettigrew the other night and absolutely loved it. After watching my load of the heavy movies, Diving Bell, 4 months, I needed a break and was hell-bent on finding a frothy pick-me-up. Having always been a sucker for the old-school Hollywood throwbacks, I was really excited to watch Miss Pettigrew and even more delighted to find out it was everything I wanted it to be, with just a tinge of the unexpected. And this is a movie with Frances McDormand. Who's the other big star in it?
Amy Adams, right?
Oh, Amy Adams, I think.
And our boy Kieran Hands, I think, is the love interest.
From There Will Be Blood.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to check it out now. It's that just a tinge of the unexpected that'll get me there.
That's all you needed to hear?
All right. Well, Peter Gallagher of Glasgow writes in. He said he wanted to mention REC to us, or it's REC in brackets. You know, like you would find on a video camera. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's a Spanish horror movie told in sort of a handheld camera perspective of Blair Witch and Diary of the Dead style. But believe me, it's the scariest movie you'll ever see, and that's a good thing. It's totally incredible, and I would highly recommend you guys see it when the opportunity arises. I saw it at a movie preview event a couple months ago, and I saw it the same day as The Orphanage. Now, I think The Orphanage is a great film, but if you think that was scary, wait till you see REC. You will actually scream with fear. I know you guys aren't huge horror aficionados. Neither am I. In fact, I tend to be a bit of a scaredy cat, but you can't afford to miss this movie.
Maddie, you're a huge scaredy cat, even worse than me, I think. Are you going to see it if it comes out?
Dude, I am on record as saying this, man. If I can rent it, all right, if I can rent it and it comes into my mail and I can put it in my DVD, I can have all the lights on, I can have a cold, frosty PBR at my side, I am completely fine with watching it.
Okay.
where I'm trapped in the theater, I don't like it. I don't like it so much. All right, well, I did want to mention, we did have a lot of people write in during our top five movies about London with a recommendation, The Long Good Friday.
You've talked about it a couple times, but you hadn't been through it yet. Now you finished
Now I finished it. I love it. I absolutely love it. Bob Hoskins is sort of this working class gangster, and his mall is Helen Mirren, who's just as gorgeous in 1980.
We know you have a thing for her.
Oh, my God, she's beautiful. Anyway, it's a great film, and I mentioned to you the last shot is very, very Michael Clayton, and I think it's even better.
Wow. Okay. I want to see it.
Yeah, and I also wanted to mention, this is a kind of a fun one. We were doing our top five actors last year, and Gordon Pinsent was my number one actor from last year from Away From Her, and I was trying to figure out, God, what else has he done? And a couple people from Canada had written in with some suggestions, and I rented Colossus, The Forbin Project.
One of the best titles ever.
Yeah, and it's about this computer system basically in the 1970s that's set up to make the world safe. Then, of course, it takes over. And
you mean Failsafe?
Yeah.
Or Terminator?
Right. But this is before then, uh-huh. And it's fantastic.
Really?
It's really, really fantastic.
And how is Gordon Pinsent, a young Gordon Pinsent?
I didn't recognize who he was. He's the president. I actually had to wait for the credits. I didn't
nice.
Recognize who he was.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's definitely worth checking out.
I will have to do that. This one from the Reverend Robert Lewis in Bethesda, Maryland.
A good Lutheran, I might add.
Yes, he is. After listening to show number 200 and hearing the brief discussion about Western movies and John Wayne, I'd like to make a suggestion. How about a John Wayne marathon? Maybe even a non-Western John Wayne marathon. Some suggestions. The Quiet Man, Island in the Sky, Wake of the Red Witch, Reap the Wild Wind, Sands of Iwo Jima, The Green Berets, and In Harm's Way. All great suggestions. I like that idea.
Have you seen any of those?
No.
I've seen The Green Berets, which, you know, is really sort of a Western set in Vietnam.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of that plot. Actually, it kind of might be interesting for us to review because it's the only film about Vietnam made while the conflict was actually
going on.
That's
true. It's very notable for that, but it's also been much maligned, obviously.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's propaganda. I mean, it's very pro-war, but it does have one of the greatest theme songs of all time.
Yeah.
The Battle of the Green Berets.
Just like I avoided a lot of Westerns because I associated them with my father, my dad watches the Green Berets, the Sands of Iwo Jima. He can watch them nonstop every day, and that's what he does. So maybe I was kind of turned off in that way, but I do want to check him out.
All right. Maybe we should do a war film marathon?
Yeah, we should.
And finally, Jeff Waldoff from Chicago writes in, he answers, this week's Massacre Theater was Annie Hall, and he's a believer in the idea that all Massacre Theater performances should feature Maddie's Chris Walken impersonation. Imagine the fun when Christopher Walken steps into Ellen Page's role in a future Massacre Theater version of Juno. You should have gone to China, you know, because I hear they give away babies, like free iPods. You know, they pretty much, they just put them in those T-shirt guns and shoot them out at sporting events.
And scene.